White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and now by Audible.com and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo, which still needs a sound effect. Lorindo! I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we got knocked down, but we got back up again, and they're never going to keep us down because, you know, that was how I was going to open, and I think I opened last week's episode, which will henceforth be known as the lost episode. It's kind of like those episodes of Doctor Who that the BBC recorded and then erased over, and like one TV station in Angola found a VHS copy from 1964. And it's the only surviving copy. I keep thinking there's going to be like some ham radio operator in Botswana that's going to email us and say, I have your missing episode. If you will deposit $20,000 in the bank account of this Nigerian prince, then you can have your lost episode, you know?
And that's too bad because it was probably the greatest podcast ever recorded.
I think it was the best one we've ever done. I mean,
no, not just that we've ever done, that anyone's ever done. No,
well, the listeners are probably going to suspect slight hyperbole on your part if you say it's the greatest podcast ever done. But if I tell them that it's the greatest of our show ever done, they have no reason to doubt that, see? So they will.
And not that high a bar to jump over.
And it's. It is kind of like saying, that's the biggest beatdown of Louisiana Monroe I've ever seen. It is kind of a low bar. Yeah, low threshold. But no, I did think that that last week's episode had some very good moments to it, and most of them yours, of course. But I had a couple of things I was kind of proud of. And so we are going to kind of go back through and hit a few of what we can remember from our notes and whatever. I did salvage my notes. But I deleted some things. This is really funny. Usually as we go through the notes, I delete stuff and then save it so it's gone. But for whatever reason last week, I actually highlighted it in blue as we talked about it. So I've still got it. A lot of it, not all of it. So we can kind of hit a few highlights as we go along. We don't want to rehash the entire episode. I mean, that episode alone took an hour and a half, basically. I was going to break it into two shorter episodes, so... if we did two whole episodes tonight, it would be 3 hours.
But, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I think we don't need to do that. But I may still, in fact, we didn't talk about this going in, but we may still want to break this into two episodes because I do have a feeling we're going to end up talking about a lot, and we're probably going to want to spread it over 2 days. So we'll have like a Tuesday episode and a Wednesday or Thursday episode. So, and by the way, I did notice that the War Eagle Sports Radio Network never posted episodes 2 and 3 of our 3-part episode going into LSU. So if you listen to us on iTunes or on Podbean or on the War Eagle Reader, I believe Jeremy posted all 3. You heard all 3 episodes if you wanted to. That may be even more AU Wishbone than our diest, hardest fans want to listen to. But I do know this. If you listen to us on the War Eagle Radio app, you only got the first episode. You did not get listener questions. So if you ever want to hear the rest of that, which was the other like hour or hour and 10 minutes, go to auwishbone.podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, like growing out in the field, podbean.com, and you can find all 3 episodes, part 1, part 2, and part 3. They're on iTunes still, too, although iTunes does tend to roll things off pretty quickly, unfortunately. So, all right, first thing I got to point out tonight, The problem was my Skype recorder software, which has worked faithfully for like the last 3 years since we went to it from the last one that quit working, strangely. So for about 3 years we've been using it, and it's been very good. I like it a lot, but it just totally screwed up, and I downloaded 15 versions of it and uninstalled and reinstalled, restarted and everything. So finally I just ripped it completely out of the computer, and we are now using MP3 Skype Recorder 4.26. And John is also recording a backup version on his computer, hopefully. So if everything goes well, we should end up with at least one functional copy of this episode. And if like last week, everything goes wrong, well, John and I had a fun conversation on the phone that nobody else will ever know about. So
we'd be talking to each other about the football game anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. We would have had more or less that same conversation. I just probably wouldn't have used quite as many sound effects. So,
yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe not. All right, so let's roll on into it. And like I say, if we get a certain distance into it, I may just say, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode, and then we'll start up again. In fact, maybe before listener questions, we'll do that. I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. But the first thing we want to do is kind of hit on some of the highlights that we were taking after we brought out of the LSU game, right? So one of the things was that I was pointing out just how many big, powerful teams are struggling on offense this year, and that's something I did want to kind of bring up again. And we saw even more of it this past Saturday, right? I mean, LSU seems to have gotten over their offensive problems, but Oregon is having horrible, particularly on defense, but all kind of horrible problems. Southern Cal's having all kind of problems. Oklahoma's very mediocre. UCLA's struggling along. Notre Dame, Texas, Penn State, Florida State got blown out 2 weeks ago and then got beaten at the buzzer by North Carolina this week. They've got two losses. So there's a lot of teams out there that are suddenly struggling and that have two or more losses. What do you make of that right now? What's going on with this season?
I think a lot of the traditional teams aren't as good as people thought they were or projected them to be. And some of it is schedule. I think some of those teams have played tough schedules, and that's why they have two losses. And some of those teams just, aren't as good, or they have a flaw that's so bad it limits how good they could be. Like in the case of Notre Dame, their defense is terrible. They can't cover anybody, so with that kind of case, I mean, like 7-5, 6-6 is the best they're possibly going to do. So some of these other teams, I mean, they play good teams and lost. I mean,
yeah,
Florida State is a good team. They're not a great team. They're not a playoff team like a lot of people thought they were. But right. I mean, they got blown out of the stadium at Louisville, but they lost to a very good North Carolina team. And they still got to play Clemson, and they still got to play some other good teams. So they still got to play Florida at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
A team like Ole Miss, because of who they play, they've got two losses, and they're a really good team, I think. So, it's just interesting this year that unless you're Alabama or Michigan or Texas A&M or Clemson now, I mean, there's a handful of teams that are undefeated, but everybody else has got 1, 2, 3 losses, and it's pretty amazing who some of those teams are that have already got 2 or 3 losses,
mm-hmm.
including us. But, we played as tough of teams as anybody has, I guess, so far. So
I was going to say, Football Outsiders does this advanced statistical ranking where they combine Bill Conley's stats with Brian Freimo's advanced stats, and it basically is a – there's no opinion subjectivity in it. There's no human voting. It's basically an evaluation of how efficient you have been on both sides of the ball and how well you have played against your opponents. So good teams or great teams, have you done well against them, and bad teams, have you dominated them? And Auburn was 14th in that poll today the country.
So 14th. All right, tell me again if my mind didn't latch on to all that.
Well, think about it this way. Think of it as like a objective statistical power ranking.
Okay.
It doesn't care about polls or opinion or anything else. It's just – Ole Miss and LSU are ahead of us in that.
Okay.
because it's looking at the big picture of who you've played, how you've played, mm-hmm. and both of those cases, I think there's still some preseason, like maybe 20% of the ranking is based on preseason projection, and that's probably propping up LSU a little bit, but so it doesn't have the kind of human thing where it fluctuates wildly if you win or lose.
Right.
It's looking at how well you played. And I think in Auburn's case particularly, it's looking at, you know, not just how well we played in the big games against the good teams, but against the two lesser teams we played, Auburn dominated them to a degree we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. More than 50 points both times.
Mm-hmm.
And we've only given up numbers out of the teens once, you know, so far this year, and that was 29, so to A&M. So we had a long discussion last time in the lost episode about Rhett and Gus handing over the offensive play calling and all that. I don't think we need to rehash all that because, you know, let's just sum it up this way. The controversy going in was it Jack Crow was saying that it was basically Gus trying to make Rhett into a scapegoat. But I think that what we've seen in the 2 weeks so far is quite the opposite, that Gus felt like Rhett would do a good job, and he has been.
Well, and Gus felt like he was part of the problem.
Right.
I think where the kind of schizophrenic play calling in the Clemson game in particular was Gus, and that he needed to get out of that and get out of the offense's way, and he did.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely made a difference. So what I asked you last time, I'll ask you again, and knowing what we know after another week, but I asked you what percent, and let's take it fresh, like we didn't have this conversation last week. Right now, what percentage chance do you see Rhett Lashley being on this staff in 2017? Being on the Auburn staff, let's say. With 100 being he's on there, no doubt about it, and 0 meaning he's definitely getting fired, or he'll not be part of Auburn's coaching staff under any circumstances next year.
90%.
Wow. That's higher than last week, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think whatever number I said, and I don't remember what it was, it's higher now. I think that he really has done a good job.
And I think it's probably like 5% everything goes in the toilet from here to the end of the season, and he loses his job, but the other 5% he gets a head coaching job because he does such a good job.
Wow.
So I would say it's both scenarios are open there.
And that's not exactly what we were thinking we would be saying a couple of weeks ago, is it? That's quite amazing how things can change.
No, but it's, you know, a lot of Auburn fans think Rhett is worthless and that he's a liability.
Yeah.
And so part of it is a chance for him to prove that he knows what he's doing. And so far he's done that. We'll see. We got to go on the road against the SEC team this week, and that'll be a big test. But the offense is clearly better. I think, you know, it's clearly better than it was early this season, and I think it's better coordinated than it was at many times last season.
Yeah. No, I agree. Let's see. The other thing we talked about, and I want to talk about it from the fresh perspective of having played another game since then, is how does this change our prospects going forward? How do you feel about the team going forward now that you based compared to how you felt
pre-LSU?
Pre-LSU, yeah.
Well, the LSU win was obviously gigantic from that perspective. I mean, if we'd have lost to them, it's tough to see how we could win the rest of these games. But now I look at the schedule and I feel like the only games where – you know, I feel like right now, if you said write down the games Auburn's going to lose, I'd say Ole Miss and Alabama, and that's it.
Well, and, you know, the funny thing is we always play Ole Miss competitively. I can't remember getting blown out by Ole Miss, not in any real severe way.
No, I know, but I just think this particular Ole Miss team has a lot of offensive firepower, and we're not going to beat them in a lower scoring game. I'm skeptical that that's possible. So, you know, can Auburn go in there and score 38 points or something? I don't know.
Right.
So that's the only thing I think about. I mean, I you're right. Auburn plays this Ole Miss team well. I think our defense can play with anybody. That's the other thing coming out of the LSU game that you have to believe is
right.
I formation, we played spread teams, we played I formation teams, and this defense is for real. It's one of the best defenses of the country. And they're going to keep us in every game. The offense just has to be competent. It has to be good. If it's better than good, we're in great shape. But if the offense is just good, we're going to have great special teams. We're going to have excellent defense. We'll be fine. Yeah. And I think, you know, other than Ole Miss and Alabama, I don't think any of the teams we're playing beyond this point are great. They're just not. I mean, you know, I think Georgia is probably the next best team, and they're deep. They have a lot of problems. So
yeah, that they a lot of that was just that they always play Tennessee really well in Athens. It's always a close game, no matter what. How good.
Well, and Tennessee is a, you know, a team that's played like three good quarters in five games or whatever. So
truth, that's the truth. When we get to around the SEC, I want to talk a little bit about LSU now under Bow Bow football, but we'll save that till then. I gotta crack open something here. I got my Minute Maid beloved fruit punch here. Do you know it's been like 2 years since I had a Dr. Pepper? You people on the air probably heard the last time. I probably had it on the air. I should have anyway. But let me. Ah, there we go. Get me some fruit punch to kind of gaggle. Sounds good, doesn't it?
But I do think Auburn's prospects have changed. I mean, the way we view this team by winning the LSU game, I think it was a huge turning point. I think the other thing is that was a very physical game, a very tough game. And I think the team showed a lot of toughness in the way they won that game that I think people thought Auburn was soft and a finesse team and that they couldn't, you know, that it was a very, we joked about them kind of channeling their inner Tuberville in that game, but it was a very Tuberville-ian kind of game. Because it was a very hard-nosed, hard-fought, ugly kind of game, and Auburn won it.
It's so weird how games that we play in Auburn are always that way against LSU, and the games we play against LSU in Baton Rouge are always they just roll over us like a steamroller. I don't understand it. That's just so weird, you know. But we play them either really tough and close, or we blow them out in Auburn, and then down there they always just blow us out. It's such a weird series.
I mean, they're a very talented team. The frustrating thing for me is I think LSU is good, but we're going to get zero credit for beating LSU. We're all just going to have to live with that.
Yeah.
Because they may run the table. They may beat Alabama, but everybody's going to say, well, that was before they fired Les Miles, and so it doesn't count.
Yeah, well, we'll just see how our schedule works out, our season works out.
That's right. No, we got a lot of games ahead. We got a tough game ahead of us this weekend against a team that's caused us a lot of problems recently and a coach we really want to beat. So,
and it's a game that's never a blowout. I mean, it's always tough and close. I saw, you know, some people today, some were saying, maybe it was on Twitter or AL or whatever, people were saying, you know, Auburn has every reason to go in. I think it was Auburn AU Sports mailing list. They were saying Auburn should go in there. We got better talent than them all over the field. And like, well, yeah, that doesn't matter because that game's always closed, particularly over there in Starkville. You know, they always play us a gritty, tough, often low scoring game in Starkville. And so we just have to gut out a win. I mean, even without Dak Prescott, they still are very formidable when they play us for whatever reason. I'd love to have a nice blowout of them. It's been a while.
And they had last week off.
Oh, great.
So they spent 2 weeks resting and preparing for Auburn. They're going to be ready.
Let's see. So we didn't spend the weekend off. We spent the weekend rolling over Louisiana Monroe. And I think really the only bad thing that came out of it was Malik Miller having to be basically helped off the field. Couldn't even put any weight on his leg. Because he looks like such a good power back, you know. He looks like somebody that could grow into another Petway. And I hated, because we already don't, you know, Petway's already out. Hopefully he'll be back for Mississippi State. But he's banged up a little bit, so he's not 100%, at least right now. And now Malik Miller, Lord knows when he'll come back, because it didn't look – you saw that, right? Did you see the injury? Yeah.
No, they announced tonight he is having surgery.
He is.
So he's going to miss like 6 weeks or something.
At least, yeah, he may end up medical redshirting the year. So, Steven Davis and Malik Miller out. And this was so stupid, though, too. It was like just a just a simple one-on-one tackle against Louisiana Monroe. It always seems to be those kind of games where the big players get hurt. You know, it's never in the Iron Bowl, it seems like, or anything. It's always like against, you know, some little team that you just have a freak accident that hurts them. I hate that. But what did you think about all the second half? I mean, well, let's start first. I mean, Sean White looked really good in this game, don't you think?
I think he has a lot of confidence. I think the way they're calling the plays gives him a lot of confidence. I think Auburn threw the ball out on first down, and he looked really sharp, and the receivers looked good. And I thought he looked really good, like in command. So I think the offense looked really good with him in it.
You know who else looked really good as usual?
Who?
Carry on my wayward son.
He ran with authority. He's continuing to impress, I think, and turn people's heads, because he had sort of been pegged by a lot of Auburn people and others as kind of an Ontario McCaleb or kind of a Corey Grant, maybe. He's turning a little more Trey Mason every week, it seems to me.
I didn't think he could do the stuff that he did against LSU.
Right.
He ran with a ferocity and a toughness in that game that shocked me, and it was very impressive. And he continued it this week, and he was not going to go down easy. He was willing to, especially with Pett way out, he knew he had to run up the middle and get some tough yards, and he did it. He was very impressive. So I love the way Kerryon's playing, and I think he's a huge factor for Auburn. I think he can really, really, you know, be the guy for this team. I think we need Pettway because of his power. And I think, you know, especially when we're trying to control the ball and run up the middle against a lot of SEC teams, Pettway is better for that. But Kerryon's shown he could do it. So
do you think we'll have Pettway back for Mississippi State?
Yes, I think it was 100%. They rested. And the other thing that happened in this game that helped the running game is they shuffled the offensive line because the center was banged up, and they put Darius James at left tackle and put Golson at center. And their line blocking was excellent. Now, some of that is just the drop off of competition, but I thought the offensive line looked really, really good in this game, better than they had been. And they were opening up huge holes, and I think they were, you know, really working together well. So I think there's a chance they don't go back, and Dan Peter doesn't get his job back.
Interesting. That's been something of a puzzle, I think, all season, because they clearly thought that it was better to have Golson out on the end, you know, and have Dan Peter in the middle. And do you think that was a mistake, maybe, that they misjudged or they overestimated what Dan Peter could do?
I don't know if it's that, or if they thought Golson would do a lot better. And they thought Darius James really couldn't handle it. Golson is clearly better than Dampier, I think. But I think they wanted him to give him a shot at tackle. And I think he wanted to play tackle and not play center. But, you know, I think at tackle he's been a little bit shaky. So, you know, he's okay against the run, but he's not great against the pass. And I think at center he's an upgrade. We didn't get, you know, obviously we haven't seen Darius James against good pass rushers, and we'll get to see some of that this weekend, but if they play in there, but so that's the part we don't know about. So,
well, one thing I've been encouraged about is that our young receivers are catching the ball.
It's so exciting.
It's such a strange thing. It's like, the ball goes to them and they actually catch it. I'm not used to that.
Last year, the drops were so routine that we all just got used to it. And now it's like, it's so encouraging. They catch the ball and they catch the ball in traffic and they go kind of attack the ball. And now Tony Stevens has had a couple of drops and Marcus Davis had a couple of drops and the weapon had a drop, you know, before, but, I think the, you know, especially the younger guys, like we got Kyle Davis is great. We got to keep getting him in and get him the ball. And Nate Craig Myers caught a big touchdown pass in this game. So I think the younger guys have played really well. And I think they're, you know, they got Stove into this game and gave him some reps. So I think it's going to be interesting to see down the road, you know, as they get better and better. I think Kyle Davis is, you know, his future is so bright. He's going to be so good. 2 years from now, he's going to be an all-SEC player. He's going to be terrorizing people.
And Nate Craig Myers could be not too far behind. I mean, mm-hmm. he'll look really impressive. The weapon kind of disappeared for a couple of weeks. What's become of him?
He had a couple of big drops in the A&M game, and I think they kind of reevaluated the whole rotation.
Mm.
And I think clearly, I mean, the top guys right now are Tony Stevens, Ryan Davis,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, who's shown he can play. He can make plays. He's a good, you know, kind of shifty slot receiver kind of guy on the inside, and he does well there. And Kyle Davis, I think, to me, those three guys, they're still playing Marcus Davis some. But I think it's those three guys, really, that I look for down the road to be the kind of the heart of the passing game. And Will Hastings, Marcus Davis, the other guys are, you know, the other younger guys, Nate Craig Myers will play probably play, start playing more. But and some of it depends on who we're playing and the style of play. I think, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, I think we have really good receivers. You know, we're okay at fullback and tight end, but I think this offense is better sometimes when we go to four receivers and with carry on and a quarterback in the game and have an extra receiver out there to spread the defense out more, make him go to like dime, and then they have fewer big defenders in there to tackle carry on when he's running the ball.
That's a good point. Yeah. What do you think about our sort of third team to second team running back currently being Stanton Truitt?
You know, he's a little thicker than I remembered him, and he seems like when he gets the ball, he's kind of explosive.
Hey, I've him there all season. It's really kind of surprised me.
It is. He's clearly kind of a, I don't know, like a poor man's Cory Grant kind of is what they see him as, I guess.
I guess so.
I mean, I liked what Cam Martin, you know, showed in that game, too. I think he would be fine if we needed to. There was a point in that game where we needed him. You know, last weekend, and I think he was okay. So,
yeah, I worry about us running out of running backs. I really do. I'm just it concerns me. I mean, we've got two that are banged up now, and you got to think that Kerryon just can't keep carrying the ball as much as he did the last couple of weeks. He needs somebody to come in and kind of share reps with him. It seems like so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about. We talked about Sean White. What about JF3 and his chance with the ball starting in the late third quarter? I mean, I know it. We don't want a quarterback controversy. We're all happy with what Sean's doing, but good Lord, I mean, at least against lesser competition, JF3 was lighting it up.
He looked great in that game. I mean, the run was great. The pass was excellent. There are Auburn fans who think he should be starting.
Yeah.
Not me.
Well, he's not as consistent throwing the ball as Sean yet, anyway. At least that's our understanding. But it's been a while since we had a player that could take the ball and go 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. I mean, Cam went 50 against LSU. But that was more of an exhibition of power than of raw speed. I mean, Cam was like the Hulk going 80 yards, not the Flash. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so Cam was more like Andre the Giant the free for all when they have everybody in there, and he's just like dragging 12 guys, you know, around the ring. That's what he's more like. So. This was more like this was just like the Flash, literally. It was like he snapped the ball, he took a step to the right, and he was gone. It was already over. Could he do that against other teams, or was this just because we were playing the scrubs?
I think a lot of that was because of who we were playing. I mean, I said during the LSU game, you can't run side to side against LSU.
No.
I mean, I'm sorry. That stuff with JF3 against LSU – that was a no-go. Now, that's LSU. They're the fastest defense in the SEC, and they're always really bad to do that side-to-side stuff against. So I think that was not going to work. So I think there are places and times in games, and there are some games when I think it could work. I think in particular, if we've been pounded on a team the whole game or like late in the half, first half, or late in the second half, with the other team's tired. I love the idea of bringing in JF3. Like, if we've been controlling the ball and running the ball on them and making run away on the other team and had long drives and the defense is tired for the other team, I love the idea of bringing in JF3. Like, we're ahead, we're running the clock or whatever, and the other team's defense is tired. It's going to be a problem for them. And I don't mind the idea of bringing him in the red zone. We had a lot of these red zone problems in LSU, and we talked a lot about that. But I think he could help in that area. I think, if we're at, like, the five-yard line with JF3 and Petway in the game, I think it's very tough for the defense because they want to spread out so Franklin can't run around him. And that opens up enough creases in the middle that I think Petway could score with the right blocking. So I think – that kind of scenario, I could see us using that too. I think he's a weapon, and I think we will try to get him the ball at times. But I think, like, if – I mean, pick a game, like Ole Miss or whatever. If Sean White was hurt and JF3 started the Ole Miss game and they had time to prepare for him and stuff, I think they'd eat him up over the course of the game. I just do. I think – they'd be prepared for him, and I think he'd have to be able to throw the ball consistently to beat him, and I don't think he can.
Yeah. No, I agree. They both have certain strengths. I think we can agree as long as Jeremy is on the sidelines rooting for him, and that's about it. We're good with that?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. And I have seen Woody Barrett out on the sidelines roaming around a little bit. I see that number one go by from time to time and the little mini dreadlocks. It makes me happy.
Well, I said I would have played Woody Barrett that game because, to me, like, if Sean White got hurt, he was going to miss three games.
Yeah.
Again, because of what I just said about JF3, I think we'd get to a point where we'd maybe start JF3. We'd have to put Woody Barrett in. So, but hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully Sean stays healthy and it's not an issue. But
right, well, I hope so. But yeah, no, you're right, and you need to get him a little experience. It might not have been bad. You know, on the one hand, you hate to burn a red shirt, but on the other hand, I mean, I don't know that we want to. I don't know. I mean, how long is he going to be there? I'm not trying to say he's going to go off the NFL, but I don't know. It's just you can never count on a player being there 4 years. Something can happen, you know, or whatever, and it use it if you got the weapons, you need to use them, I guess. Use them when they're – you don't wait till later, I guess, is what I'm thinking. But I know that people have been talking a lot this week about this Stidham guy.
Jared Stidham.
From Baylor. And I keep saying, yeah, I'm sure he – you know, maybe we'll get him and maybe we won't. Maybe he'll be a great quarterback and maybe he won't. But Woody Barrett is an Auburn Tiger. I mean, I know that. I don't have any idea what Jared Stidham is. He's nothing right now. But
easy. I do it. Woody Barrett has not walked on a football field in Division I. Jared Stidham has played Division I football and succeeded.
Okay.
Stidham went to Kansas State and threw for 400 yards and beat them. He played against Oklahoma. The Oklahoma team was really good and threw for like 300 yards in a game they were competitive in. So he's a good player.
Okay. Well, let's get him out here and suit him up then. That's fine. I mean, you think he could beat out what we've got now next year?
I think if he was on the roster now, he'd be starting.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I don't know. Woody Barrett a year from now in the system, maybe he's better because Stidham is not, you know, can run a little bit, but he's more in the Sean White category in that.
I thought he was like this great dual threat quarterback. I thought that's what everybody was saying is that he's not a Sean White. He's another Cam Newton or something.
And no, he's not that. He's a good passer, but he's not that great a runner. Let's get carried away with this stuff.
That's what I've been hearing. I don't know. I heard he was like the number one dual threat quarterback when he came out of high school. Is that not true?
I don't know what his rank was coming out of high school.
I'm just going because I mean a drop back passer is not somebody I'm really interested in having on our team right now. If that's what he is, I'm not interested. If he's a legitimate dual threat that could outdo Woody Barrett, then I'll certainly entertain him. If he's not, I'm not interested. Simple as that. We've got a drop back passer right now. We don't need another. We've got two, actually. We don't. One of them, we got a blown out.
Well, but again, like this is the more talented quarterbacks is better.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. we got to point out, I got a nice note last week from Ken Ringer about, he's been out roaming the countryside, like Kung Fu, promoting, Lorindo. And, I read it last time, but nobody heard it because it was on the lost episodes. So a couple of things he pointed out that's really kind of neat. He said, this is kind of cool. He said that, he got an email from a 1985 female graduate of Auburn who lives in Washington State. So she gets to see some fine football up there with the Cougs. And, she gave a copy of Lorindo to her father for his birthday. And he said it was the best birthday gift ever. He loved it. So that's really cool. Also, he got a call from Ken Ringer, got a call from a member of the 1957 Auburn National Championship team, who the entire team should be statues outside the stadium, honestly. And they called early one morning to say, I woke up yesterday in a panic. I could not find my copy of Lorindo. Please send me two more copies. We like to hear that. And, finally, Paul Feinbaum now has a copy of Lorindo. He got his copy and sent an email to Mr. Ringer saying, appreciate the book very much. Can't wait to read it. Paul Feinbaum. So I can't wait to hear what F-Bomb has to say about Lorindo. I can't think of two people any more different in life than Paul Feinbaum and, Lorindo. I just can't, right? I mean, just polar opposites. The other interesting thing, though, was funny, was that he pointed out there's been a selection committee put together to find the new president for Auburn, for the university. And he noted that one of the members of the committee is Dr. Laura Plexico, associate professor. And he asked if she was related to me. And I believe that she is an in-law. I believe she is married to one of my distant relatives from the mothership of South Carolina. The Plexico mothership in the South is South Carolina. I am a member of the small Alabama branch that where my granddad was like one of like nine brothers who all became, or most of them became, Presbyterian ministers. And the church sent my granddad to Sylacauga, Alabama. That's how we all wound up in Alabama. But the other branches are mostly in South Carolina. So there's a bunch of Plexicos in South Carolina. I think she married into that crowd and ended up at Auburn. So, but I have exchanged emails with her several years ago. I was aware she existed. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, make sure you check out, Lorindo. We still got to get it out on Kindle. It's in paperback. We got to get that book out in Kindle. Also, by the way, make sure you check out go to audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone. If you're going to use Audible, if you're going to try it out and get your free book, they've got, you know, tons of books available on audio, including several of mine, including, the first volume in my Sentinels book series. Then go to audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone. If just like four or five people do it, our bills are paid for this show through the year. So that would be awesome if people do that. And you know what I need to, you know what I never point out, John, and I haven't in a long time, is if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, go and leave a review or a 5-star rating or something, because the more we get, the easier it is to find the show on iTunes. Right now, I'll go and search Auburn Podcast. We don't always come up, and that bothers me. So if people go and leave a rating, leave a review. And then the last thing, because I know that people are getting bored and they want to get back to the football. One last thing, I had mentioned last week I would be at Archon in St. Louis. Well, that's already gone now, but coming up October 22nd through 24th, I'll be back down in Birmingham again in Hoover. So if you recall that in October of last year, we did the sci-fi festival at the Hoover Library, and it was one day, and Bobby Nash and I were the guests. They're doing that again, and I'll be back down there as a guest again with several other new people. And this year it's going to be like 3 days long. It starts Friday afternoon and runs through Sunday. So I will be down there. I'll have a bunch of my books. I think the artist that's going to work on the new graphic novel we're doing is going to be there too. So come on out to the Hoover Library October 22nd through 24th. You can say hello and get your book signed. I'll have a few Auburn books with me and everything else. So. Do we have listener? Wait, hold on. Mira has something to say about that, doesn't she?
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
What we got?
All right, I'm going to go. Some of these are this week and some of these are last week. I'm going to kind of mix them up in here. one of these is something that Chris Hilton sent in last week, and he said, the most interesting man in LSU football, Les Miles or Ed Orgeron?
I still think Les Miles is the most interesting man in football. Orgeron is a character. He's a cartoon character. Les is the Zen master of football. There you go. What do you think?
I think it's good. We got a question last week. Which I didn't want to go back into this, but there was an article today. Carter Glaus said, are any of these Bryles rumors I'm hearing or potential OC replacement for Lashley?
Oh, my God!
We were just saying Lashley's doing well now. So
he is, but there was I didn't read it, but I can tell you one of Auburn's favorite writers, Pete Thamel, had an article on CNNSI today where he was talking about Malzahn replacements and mentioned Art Briles. So.
You cannot be serious!
Yeah, I have no interest in that.
I don't either.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
That sentence at the end is the best. It would be very clear about this, and I'm not going to go through the long thing I went through last time where I talked about Art Briles, but he's not going to be the Auburn coach. He's not going to be the Auburn offensive coordinator, so you can just forget all those things. It's not going to happen.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And Art Briles, John?
He's not walking through that door.
There you go.
All right. Daniel Henry has a few questions. He sent in some questions last week and on the Lost podcast. We answered them, and so he sent some more this week.
It's funny when you say it, there's no echo.
Do you think the red zone issue was mostly about the same – was kind of the same in that game because we didn't show our hand because of Mississippi State? Did we come up with a bunch of red zone stuff that we haven't shown, that we didn't show against Louisiana Monroe? What do you think?
Now, I think the red zone problems were a combination of two things. It's a combination of too many negative plays. We were just eaten alive with negative plays there for a while, which is if there's one thing that Rhett's play calling has done, he's gotten rid of not all, but a lot of the negative plays. And that's been a huge, huge difference. The other problem, I think, in the red zone was that a lot of the plays we were actually having success with were working because we had room to run around and kind of do a, you know, there were plays that took more vertical room in a lot of cases. And when you get down inside the red zone, it limited what we can do based on the players that we're currently using. I don't mean the scheme or whatever, but just like with the current players we have, right, we don't have that big offensive lineman blowing up on one end. We don't have a Nick Marshall that could, you know, we've said it before, we really just every day realize more and more what a weapon Marshall was and realize that, you know, he on the edge, how many times did Nick Marshall roll out, fake a handoff and just run for 20 or 30 yards for a touchdown?
Mm-hmm.
So many times, right? So the player personnel that we have currently are better between the 20s than on either than post 20, you know, inside the 20, I think. So what's really helped is getting rid of the negative plays and like the emergence of Kerryon Johnson as a serious running threat and the emergence of people catching the ball for Sean, and maybe a little better blocking. It's a combination of things that are starting to come together. I don't think we're anywhere near a juggernaut in the red zone against a tough defense yet, but we have played Clemson. Think about it. Clemson and LSU. Clemson's defense has proven to be a lot better than anybody thought they were going to be.
Not better than I thought they were going to be. He's asking a question here, which is related to this. He says, it was nice to see that it's not just our offensive line getting destroyed by Clemson. And he says, I'm starting to wonder if the offensive line struggles may have had a bit more to do with the quality of the defensive lines they were playing than other factors such as play calling that people originally thought. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think A&M's defense has turned out to be better than people thought, too. I mean, we played three very tough defensive teams so far.
Ding, ding, ding. And I think people are going to look back at this and go, you know, Clemson's defensive line is excellent. A&M's defensive line is excellent. You know, they're really, really good. And our offensive line is going to look better against a lot of teams than we did against them.
Yeah. That's going to do it for part one this week. Tune in a day or so for episode two, as we answer more listener questions and preview Mississippi State and take a tour around the SEC. War Eagle, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
Becomes of you, my love. When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.